I'm reading from Meditations, Ajahn Jeff, and I'm going to read In the Mood and Imagination. In the Mood. Ajahn Swat often recommended putting yourself in a good mood each time before you meditate. This may sound a little backwards for many of us because we meditate in order to put ourselves in a good mood. But yet he says to start out with a good mood. But when you stop and think about it, there's really no way you can get good results out of the meditation unless the mind has at least some good qualities in it. Some cheerfulness, some patience, some wisdom. These are qualities that act as seeds. They allow the meditation to develop. We are not totally empty-handed when we come to the meditation. We do have good qualities in the mind, and there are plenty of things we can think about to put the mind in a good mood. This is why we have the chant on goodwill to start out the meditation each time, each and every time. Goodwill is a good thing to think about. You look at yourself spreading thoughts of goodwill and you feel good about yourself. You're not totally selfish. You're not totally angry, vindictive, whatever. There's at least some goodness inside of you. You take that as your starting capital. As with your investment, you need to have something to begin with. If you don't have money, at least you've got strength. You've got your intelligence. You've got whatever good things you've got, and you invest them. That's how they grow. So when we sit here to meditate, we do our best to make the mind pleasant, make the mind patient, to lift it above the ordinary cares and concerns of the day, and then bring it to the meditation object. That way you can relate to the breath, or whatever your object, in a friendly way. Being in a good mood puts the breath in a good shape as well. If you feel frustrated about your breathing or frustrated about your meditation, that's going to do funny things to your breath. Make it harder and harder to stay with the breath. So think in whatever way helps you, helps the mind to get ready to meditate. In the mood to meditate, this is part of the first basis of success, chanda, the desire to meditate. You want to meditate. You feel an inclination, an attraction to the meditation. If you sit down and you feel yourself totally disinclined to meditate, don't just force yourself to do it. Remind yourself of the good reasons for why you're doing it. Think of the ways to make it interesting, ways to make it entertaining. You can do all kinds of things with the breath. Look at Ajahn Lee's Dhamma talks. When he defines the different levels of breathing in the body, he hardly ever repeats himself. There's always something new, always something different that he finds, that he's found from his meditation. We don't have to memorize all the ways of analyzing the breath. We should just give them a try, of course. But what we should also look at are ways of analyzing the breath energy and see what works for us. When you feel depressed, what kind of breathing is uplifting and energizing? When you feel manic, what kind of breathing feels grounding? When you feel lazy, what kind of breathing energizes you? When you feel tense, what kind of breathing relaxes you? There's a lot to explore. And in the exploration, you get absorbed in the breath without even thinking about forcing yourself or holding to a whip over the mind. This way, the mind can be on good terms with the breath. The breath can be good, and it is easier and easier to settle down. So always take stock of your mind before you meditate. See what kind of shape it's in. Don't let thoughts of frustration or discouragement take charge of the mind. The Dalai Lama once said that the thing he found most surprising about Westerners was their self-hatred. In Tibet, he said, "Only the village idiot feels self-hatred." Of course, he said that smiling, but it's a pretty harsh judgment. And it's also true. I noticed in Thailand, perhaps not so much anymore, as modern culture moves in, it really does teach people to hate themselves, to feel bad about themselves, to hold up all sorts of images of physical and financial perfection that nobody can live up to. But in traditional culture, one has the basic skills of being human. basic skills of being a human being was essentially to feel good about yourself, how to love yourself, how to wish yourself well, and how to act intelligently on that wish. Only really stupid people would hate themselves. And yet that kind of stupidity is rampant now in the modern world. So be careful not to pick it up. The mind has the potential for all kinds of moods. Sometimes simply sitting and taking stock of things for a few minutes, learning how to use our powers of thought, not to destroy ourselves as many of us do, but as an assistant to the meditation, can make all the difference. We often think that to meditate is to stop thinking. Well, you have to learn how to think properly before your thoughts can stop in a skillful way. If you're thinking in ways that are self-destructive, in ways that are really harmful to yourself, you can simply stop, like running a truck into a wall. You can get thrown through the windshield or suffer whiplash. But if you learn how to think in ways that are for your own true benefit, like the things that we chant about every evening, which are always beneficial to think about, then when the time comes for the mind to settle down and think less and less and less and get more and more absorbed in the present moment, it's a lot easier. There's a natural deceleration. So the way you prepare yourself to meditate, the attitudes you bring to the meditation are very important. This doesn't mean that you should meditate only when you're in a good mood. If you're in a bad mood, think in ways that will improve your mood, that will improve your attitude towards the meditation, your attitude towards the object that you're going to be focusing on. Remind yourself that the breath is your friend, that you're here to develop that friendship even further. And that way you're thinking, instead of being distraction is actually a component part of the meditation. It's an important step that can't be overlooked. Imagine. Psychologists have done studies of people who've mastered skills, trying to figure out why some people are simply very good at a particular skill, why other people are really masters of it. One of their discoveries is that people, to really master a skill, it has to capture their imagination. They like to think about it. They like to try different ways of conceptualizing the skill, approaching the skill, applying the skill in an unusual and unexpected ways. And although we often don't think of imagination as being involved in meditation, in fact, we think that meditation is anti-imagination. Actually, that's not the case. Try to master concentration. It has to capture your imagination, just as with any other skill. When you practice concentration, what are you doing? You're creating a state in the mind that requires imagination. The Noble Eightfold Path as a whole is something fabricated, something put together. It brings you into the present, but when you get into the present, you discover how much input your intentions have in each present moment. The practice of the path is designed to make you more and more sensitive to that fact, to see how you put things together, how you can put things together in a way that creates suffering, or how you can get more skillful at putting things together in a way that creates less and less suffering, until finally you reach a point where the whole thing gets taken apart and there's no suffering left. But to get to that last point, you have to understand what you're doing. You can't simply make up your mind that you're going to be totally uninvolved in the present moment and simply be an observer without participating. Because what happens is that your participation goes underground. You don't see it, but it's still there. So instead, you have to be very open about the fact that you're shaping the present moment simply by choosing what you focus on. That's a decision right there. The sensations you choose to focus on and the way you focus on them, you are going to shape your experience, the present moment. You're creating a becoming. The Pali word here is bhava. Bhava. And although one of the things we're trying to learn to overcome is the process of becoming, we can't simply drop the process. We have to understand it before we can let go. We have to understand it to the point of dispassion and then let it go. To do that, we have to keep creating more and more and more of these states. but we have to create a type of state that is comfortable to stay with, easy to analyze, easy to take apart, which is why we practice concentration. A senior monk in Bangkok once asked Ajahn Lee, "When you're practicing concentration, aren't you creating states of becoming in the mind?" And Ajahn Lee responded, "Yes, that's precisely what we're doing." He went on to say that you can't take the process apart until you can do it really well. He said, "It's like having a hen that lays eggs. You use some of the eggs to eat, while others you crack open and take apart." In other words, part of the role of concentration is to help keep the mind nourished on the path. The other parts is to give you something to take apart, while at the same time putting the mind in a position where it can take the present states apart. So when you're conscious of that fact, look at the way you put the present moment together. You have choices, you know. Different things you can focus on, different ways you can focus on them. If you focus on the breath, you discover that there are many different ways of conceiving and monitoring the breath, the way of labeling the breath sensations, the way you decide when an in-breath is long enough, when it's too long, when it's too short. A lot of these decisions get put on automatic pilot, but as you're meditating, you have a chance to examine them. You can look at them carefully and adjust them to see if there are any more skillful ways of deciding how long a good long breath in breath is, what signs indicate the breath is just long enough. The same holds true with the out breaths, the depths, the rhythm, the texture, the breath, the texture of the breath. There's a lot to play with here. And the word play is important because you've got to enjoy the process. Otherwise, there's no enthusiasm for the meditation. You simply go on, you go through the motions because it's time to meditate. And when there's no enthusiasm, no joy in the process, you have a hard time sticking with it. The mind is going to lose interest, get bored in trying to find something else to think about, something else to fill up the hour. What you end up doing is filling the hour with filler, straw, shredded paper, and styrofoam peanuts, things that are not nearly as helpful as learning about the breath. The reason we're here is not just to put in time. We're here to see how the mind is creating unnecessary suffering for itself and learn how to stop doing it. One helpful way of understanding the process is to look at the ways psychologists have analyzed imagination. They've discovered that it involves four skills. The first is being able to generate an image in the mind, simply giving rise to an image of one kind or another. The second is to maintain that image. The third is to inspect it, look at its details, explore some of its ramifications. And the fourth ability is to alter the image, make changes, and then inspecting it again to see what happens after you altered it. And although the psychologists who discovered these four skills were concerned primarily with the mental pictures in the mind, you discover that any kind of creative work, writing, creating a tune, whatever, involves these same four steps. When you compare the four steps to concentration, you find that they really apply here as well. In fact, they correspond to the four bases of success: desire, persistence, intentness, and ingenuity. In terms of concentration, the first step corresponds to giving rise to a nice, pleasant state here in the present moment. Can you do that? If you want to, you can. As the Buddha said, all phenomena are rooted in desire. So how are you going to make use of the desire to give rise to that pleasant state? You can adjust the breath. You can adjust your focus. Breathe in such a way that gives you rise to a pleasant feeling in at least one part of the body. Then the next step, once you've learned how to generate that state, is to maintain it. Keep it going. You'll discover that you need mindfulness, alertness, steadiness to do that. Sometimes you find that it's like surfing. The waves change beneath you, but you have to learn to keep your balance. In other words, the needs of the body will change, but you can keep that pleasant sensation going in spite of those changes. When you first sit down, the body may need a fairly heavy rate of breathing in order to feel comfortable. But then as it feels more comfortable, the body needs will change. And so you have to learn how to ride that change in the wave. Adjust the rate of breathing so that it's just right for the body right now. Right now, right now. This makes you more and more sensitive to the fact that the body's needs are changing. But you can learn how to maintain a particular balance as you get more and more sensitive in responding to those needs and giving the body the kind of breathing it wants. Of course, the body's not going to sit there saying, I want this, I want that. But you get more and more sensitive to the signs, the sensations that tell you that certain parts of the body are starved of breath energy, and you can consciously breathe into them. The third step is inspection. You look at the state you have in the body. Are there places where it's still uncomfortable? Places where it still feels tense? Where it feels tight? Well, you can think of ways to change the breath. That's the fourth step. The third and fourth steps play off each other in this way. Once you change things, you inspect them again to see the change has made any improvement or if it's made things worse. If it's made things worse, you can try another change. Keep inspecting. Keep adjusting. In Pali, it's called vichara, or evaluation. And as things get more and more comfortable, you find that the range of comfort has been able to create for yourself begins to expand. You can breathe in with a sense that the breath energy in the body is connected in all of its parts. You breathe out and the energy feels connected. Your awareness keeps filling the body, saturating the body. After a while, you get to a point where you really can't improve the breath any further. It's just right as it is. As Ajahn Fong said, it's like pouring water into a water jar. You finally reach the point where you filled the jar, and no matter how much water you try to add after that, you can't get it any fuller than that. So you stop adding water. The same with the breath. When you reach the point of fullness, you stop making so many adjustments, so many changes. You can just be with the breathing. From this point, it's more of a question of how the mind relates to the breath, whether it feels that it is separate from the breath and watching it, or whether it's more immersed in the breathing. As it gets more immersed, the rate of breathing is going to change, not simply because you made up your mind to change it, but because you've changed your relationship to the breath. As you get more fully immersed in the body and the breath, you develop a sturdy feeling of unification and ease. The breathing will grow more subtle to the point where it finally stops, not because you forced it to stop, but because the mind is slowed down enough to the point where it needs less and less oxygen. The oxygen exchange at the skin is enough to keep the body going, so that it doesn't have to keep pumping in, pumping out. Ajahn Lee would compare this state to an ice cube with vapor coming off of it. The body feels very still, but around the edges there's a kind of effortless vapor that you feel with the in and out breathing. That after a while, even that stops and everything's perfectly still. All of this comes from creating that spot in the body where it feels good to stay focused on, then learning how to maintain it, then inspecting it to see where you can expand it, where you can make it more stable, then adjusting it in various ways, using your imagination to think at least of the possibility that the breath could be more comfortable, the breath could saturate the body. You could think of all the cells in the body being bathed in the breath. Whatever way you have of conceiving the breath, that makes it more and more comfortable, a better and better place to stay. In this way, the four aspects of imagination apply to what you're doing right here. Even though you're not trying to create a mental picture, sometimes there will be mental pictures behind it, but you're more concerned with the actual sensation of the breath as you feel it coming in, as you feel it going out, as you play with it, as you create a sense of very intense well-being right here, even though it's something created, something fabricated. It's a good thing to create, a good thing to fabricate. As the Buddha said, right concentration is the heart of the path. The other factors are its requisites. And for discernment to do its work of insight in the present moment, the heart of the path has to stay healthy and strong. You have to create and maintain a good solid basis through concentration. So because it's a created state, you have to be creative about it, imaginative about it. You find that you have to, that the more your imagination opens up to the possibilities already present, the more new possibilities your imagination opens up. As long as you're frank about the process that you're creating this state, you don't have to worry about getting attached to it, even though you probably will get attached to it, because deep down inside, you know it's something you've created, and eventually you'll have to take it apart. But in the meantime, learn how to do it well. The more solid the concentration, the more you want to stay here. The more you stay here, the more familiar you get with the territory. And it's through that familiarity that the practice of concentration turns into the practice of insight, the kind of insight that can liberate you. Without this stability and familiarity, your insights are simply ideas you've heard from Dhamma talks, reading books, notions you've picked up from outside. They don't seep deep into the mind because the mind hasn't softened up the territory here in the present moment. Only through the practice of concentration can the hardness of the present moment begin to soften up and give the insights a chance to seep deeper and deeper. So when you have this kind of understanding about what you're doing, you find it a lot easier to go about it. And you begin to realize it's not a mechanical process. It's a creative process. That way it can capture your imagination. When it captures your imagination, you get more interested in what you can do with the breath. Not just when you're sitting here with your eyes closed, but any time of the day. How you can deal with the breath. How you can center in the breath. How you can help deal with anger. It makes you more sensitive to what anger does to the body and you can breathe through the physical manifestations of anger so that you don't feel like they've taken over. When there's fear, you can try using the breath to deal with fear. Get in touch with the physical side of fear and breathe right through it. Notice that the breath can help you deal with boredom, how it can help you deal with illness, how it can help you deal with pain. There's a lot to explore here, and the possibilities of the breath capture your imagination. And you find that the skill is useful, not only when you're trying to sit with your eyes closed, but also whenever the present may be, wherever you may be in the present. Whatever the context, whatever the situation, you find that the breath has something to offer if you explore it. And to explore it, you have to get a sense that it can capture your imagination. It gives you that kind of challenge. Along with the sense of reward that comes from when you've explored something and discovered something new, a valuable skill. This is how meditation can start permeating your whole life. When it permeates your whole life, and when you're more and more familiar with it, that's when the insights arise, unexpected insights, sometimes insights that you won't always find in books, but are very personal, very much relevant to how you relate to events in the body and mind. And you realize that they've come to you because you've opened up your imagination to what is possible with the raw materials of the present.
When working with the breath, lately I find that I can fairly quickly find a state of sort of, moderately intense well-being, grounded in the body. But then what I find is that I find it when I try to spread that throughout the body, I often find that it seems to diminish. And I'm wondering how to discern between whether just to try to maintain that intensity or to say, well, maybe it just is toned down a bit. It's still there, and everything is, no reason to go back to where I was. Just keep trying to work further with it.
I think the listening to what you said, sort of the key word was trying to move it or trying to spread it. So then sometimes we try too hard. And when there, especially when the mind is really, really quite peaceful and settled, then you can't use blunt force. You have to, and that's where if there's too much will, too much conceptualizing of what you think you should, then it squashes the mind. So it's more like just expanding so that there isn't so much will involved, there isn't so much, but it's like just allowing it to spread or allowing it to expand. And it's a much more subtle process. And so then it oftentimes responds more readily. In that way, an experiment with that. It's a lot of it's the more the tone of how we apply the mind.
Could I ask a question about concentration and insight?
Mm-hmm.
And in the reading, you talked about deeper insight coming with concentration, but insight comes in different ways. I suppose, but I don't know if you have any insight into that?
Yes.
But I'm sure that you do. But what I mean, the kind that comes with concentration and the kind that comes in other ways, I guess it's really...
one of the things that, particularly just the necessity of, or the efficaciousness of the mind is enhanced when it's settled. So that it's more settled, it's more clear, it's more steady. So then when one applies that to investigation, or when one just allows it to open from that place, then it tends to see things more clearly. And sometimes insight does come from different things, but oftentimes it's, predicated on the that one's had some stillness already, everyone's had the mind has really sort of settled a bit for, and then at the actual particular time of an insight arising, oftentimes it might be engaged with something else, but it isn't so much the engagement that was the real causal factor, but the stillness that had sort of the mind was imbued with, or the clarity that the mind was imbued with.
And sometimes those shifts come later.
I mean, I think of one particular, one very powerful insight that I had was actually on a bus in the middle of Bangkok somewhere. Now, the samadhi at that point wasn't particularly great, but it was a cumulative effect of the mind being quite still and then being in contact with things and then reflecting.
Well, that really speaks to the importance of that, the continuity of practice that we hear so much about.
Yeah.
If you're only doing samadhi when you're on the cushion,
yeah,
it's not going to seep out to the rest of your day.
Yes.
And the power of the mind will go away.
Yeah, this is really true. That sense of continuity of practice, continuity of mindfulness.
And mindfulness that you have, not on the cushion, that's a much more broad, right, comprehensive mindfulness that we're talking about.
Yeah, but then also, sometimes the idea that we have sometimes of what mindfulness is sometimes a bit narrow, even when we're meditating. I've got to be doing this in order to be mindful. Mindfulness is actually, there's a lot more subtlety and adaptability to it. Yeah, sort of that clarity. It's just learning how to carry clarity. Because sometimes the idea of mindfulness, I mean, there's like, you know, lifting, rising, lifting, and a kind of a mechanical way of training in mindfulness. It's a tool to help foster that, but sometimes it doesn't necessarily mean we're actually being mindful. Means we're holding or focusing on a particular activity. But mindfulness, from a Buddhist perspective, is always, it's very rare that the Buddha speaks of mindfulness without conjoining it with clear comprehension. And that kind of clear comprehension is an aspect, sort of, it's got a context on mindfulness as well. Okay.